is to come and share his experience, strength, and hope.
All right, you guys, this is a surprise. So I'm Joe and I'm an alcoholic, but I'm not a young person, okay? Just to get that on the table. I am from Atlanta. I'm in town for business at the convention center for 5 days. And this month I've been busy with meeting with business. And so I haven't been to as many meetings as I have. Oh, so I said, I gotta find a meeting. And this is within walking distance and the perfect timing. And I saw it was a speaker meeting and young person's like, okay, I'll go. And then as soon as I walk in, they said, hey, you wanna tell your story? I'm like, yeah, sure. Okay, so that's what you get. My sobriety date is January 1/11/07. So I've got almost 10 years sober. But I am truly an alcoholic. I don't remember my first drink, and I don't know if I was an alcoholic from the very first time that I drank, but I do know that I really liked getting drunk. You know, it was about 15 years old, that first year, I discovered, you know, beer. It was basically quarts of beer, going out, hanging out, camping out with the guys and drinking quarts of beer. And I also discovered early on that I didn't have an off switch. I didn't know what that meant. That's what I say today. I'm an alcoholic and I don't have an off switch. When I start drinking, I just want more and more and more and more. And I would basically drink till I puke and then drink some more. I mean, that was an or. But I drank because I liked it, right? I mean, I liked getting drunk. And my story includes other things, augmenting devices, cocaine, speed, whatever. Because anything that would take me out of my place, anything that would take me to a higher point is like, do it. That's awesome. I love this stuff. But that's not what I am. I'm an alcoholic. My dad was an alcoholic. And I grew up in a house. My first news of AA or was as like 12 years old in Orlando. Oh, by the way, also, I grew up and I went to high school in Bartow, about like an hour from here. So this is kind of old stomping grounds. I never hung out and partied here, but I have a lot of friends that moved here that I used to do that with, my age. So I can tell you, you know, it started out fun. It started out, you know, hanging out with the guys, drinking beer, just, you know, whatever. And then it wasn't fun at the end. You know, it wasn't fun. And like I said, I don't know when I crossed the line, but I do know, I didn't realize this. I went to treatment 10 years ago. And I do know that in treatment, I told the story about the first time I blacked out and I was 15 years old. First time I blacked out, I was 15 years old. I remember hanging out with my buddy in high school and we'd gone out and done whatever and I didn't drive. So he dropped me off at the driveway, you know, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. And the last thing, I was just totally smashed, right? The last thing I remember that night was walking from the driveway to my front door at my family's house, and there was this huge pile of leaves, and I thought, man, that would be so comfortable to just lay down in that and go to sleep. And we used to tell that as a funny story because it was like Carol family folklore. I'm the fifth out of six kids. But the next thing I remember was the next morning waking up with a hellacious hangover, just like, you know, gongs going off and five camels sleeping on my tongue all night. Just that, the first time, you know, of that just miserable feeling. And I was in my bed. I shared with my brother. And I was undressed. And I thought, oh my God, how did I get here? And so I was scared. I remember getting up and walking outside. And my oldest is like, hi, Joey. I'm like, hi. And my mom's like, are you feeling okay today? Yeah, I'm fine. I came to find out that I woke the family up at about midnight, banging on the front door. And they said, Joe, let me in. And I woke everybody up in the house. And I said, I can't get in. Joe, the door's not locked. The door wasn't even locked. And I stumbled into the house. And, I mean, I was told this later on by my family. I stumbled into the house, and I went into the bathroom, and I locked the door, and I turned the shower on. And they had to break in. I basically passed out in the shower. But think about it this. It is kind of funny, but think about it this way. What the lady, this counselor in treatment told me is like, you know what? That's not funny because you scared the crap out of your family. Because my little brother had to break in. He had to pick me up and carry me to my bed. My sister's in the hallway. My mom's awake. The whole family's freaked out because, you know, Joe was like, I don't remember any of that stuff, you guys. I'm telling you, for the longest time, I avoided it and I laughed at it because I thought it was easier to laugh at it than to face the reality of like, I blacked out at 15 years old. That's not normal. That's just not normal. I didn't know it at the time. And I didn't know it was my first blackout. I was a blackout drinker at the end, not all the time. But so to move through my progression, my drinking is more binge drinking. You know, I could go weeks or a week without drinking and then, you know, just go off and just, you know, over the weekend just stay drunk overnight. You know, and I could never consider myself to be an alcoholic. And I mentioned to you guys that my dad was an alcoholic. I went to Alatot, we called it. Have you ever heard of Alateen? I was 12, so they started a program for people younger than teenagers at the time. We called it that. But I grew up in an alcoholic family, and I said, there's no flipping way in the world I'm going to become like that guy. I am not going to become my dad. My dad, in my mind, alcoholism was you're a loser, you can't handle your booze, you're not a man, you can't work hard, play hard, and if you can't handle your booze, you're just not a man. I mean, that's the way I thought. So I was going to do everything in my power to not become my dad. But the problem that I found out after a while, many years, was that I got this thing inside me. And I didn't want to admit it, but I have some genetic makeup that when I take that first drink or whatever, something makes me want more. And I don't have an off switch. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I just want more of anything. And I fought my butt to not become like my dad. But the more that I fought it, I wanted to be a better dad, a better husband. I wanted to be a better breadwinner, make more money just to prove that this guy that's this alcoholic loser, I was better than him. And at the end of my drinking, I'm that. I mean, so that was the hardest part of me coming to reality. I mean, I could tell you all kinds of drunk logs. I actually tried AA for the first time as an adult the day after Christmas in 2004 because, lo and behold, Christmas Day, we go to Uncle Bill's house and we're hanging out partying and we come home and the next thing I remember is the next morning and I blacked out on Christmas night with my family and they told me all the stuff I did. I was shocked that it had gotten to that point. Because what I thought I could do is drink over here with all my buddies, go to football games, go, you know, hang out, go to weekends away, just like sequester this over here. And over here, I was like this family man. We went to church. We prayed in the morning. I was trying to be a good breadwinner and all this stuff. But I felt like a hypocrite. I was a complete hypocrite because what I would do in the dark and the things that I would do when I was drinking and, you know, the little isolated type things, they were gnawing in my mind. So it just perpetuated me drinking more and just burying all that stuff. I didn't think of it that way. You know, I wouldn't have said all this at the time, but I look back and I was like, that's what happened, dude. That's what you were doing. The last year of my drinking, I used to just speak on weekends, and then it was like Thursday, and then thank God the NFL's had Thursday night football, and then ESPN had Wednesday night football, and Tuesday night football, and then there's Monday, so there's like Monday's the only, well, like Tuesday for 12 hours, there's no excuse to drink. I mean, that's the way I looked at it. But the last year of my drinking, I started doing things I never thought I would do. I was driving around with my kids in the car drunk, and I remember This lady, this is embarrassing, but I remember in one of my early meetings, this soccer mom, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? Driving a big SUV and driving her kids everywhere. At an AA meeting, was telling her story, and she said what she would do is take her kids to football practice, and she'd have her little liquor, you know, like the booze in the brown paper bag, and nip on it, and sit in the car and stay drunk. And that's what I did. And I realized, oh my God, I drink like a soccer mom. that was kind of embarrassing. But you know what, you guys, we're all, if you're an alcoholic, we do stuff like that. Whatever our circumstances are, it's the shame. And I heard, you know, Lizzie, or is it Lizzie or the gal? Jesse, sorry. Lizzie and Jesse. I caught that. It's like McGuire and sorry. The shame and remorse. You know, the thing that I really related to, what I shared a lot of was the morning after saying, oh my God, I did it again. And those moments of truth in your brain. And you know what? And I see this in alcoholics today, and I see people that I know what that's like. And I think everybody in this room knows what that's like. Because you don't want to admit that you can't handle it. You don't want to admit that it sucks. You don't want to admit that you can't, whatever, that you're scared. That you don't want to admit that you can't not drink or use drugs. But those moments are they're terrifying. That fear, you know, in the AA big book, we talk about fear, remorse, the four horsemen. We wake up with that. And so that's what drove me. Anyway, that's the thing that I really always thought about in my early sobriety. So that's my story. Many years of what things were like. You know, towards the end, I became a pretty consistent blackout drinker. And what I thought I could keep over here away from my family was collapsing. And like I said, I tried AA. And my story is it took about 2 years of going in and out. I call it the JoJo Yo-Yo program because I would go into a meeting, come out, like 2 weeks, get sober. Oh, that's cool. It's like, you know, and then I'd go on a business trip. I travel a lot. And I that was the other place I would go out on the road. And nobody would know. And I would just get hammered in hotel rooms by myself. But when I would go to a meeting and I'd recognize someone, I call it the drive-by program too. So like if I was driving to a meeting and I saw somebody I recognized, I'd keep driving by. I did not want anybody to know I was an alcoholic. I was ashamed of that. I'll just say this before I forget. Today, I know there is absolutely no shame in being an addict or an alcoholic. There's no shame in that. It's a disease. And particularly today, so long as I take, if I follow a few spiritual steps and I stay in the middle of the program, I don't have to worry about that because I'm not going to drink today. But that wasn't the way it was. And that's why so many people, you know, we know, it's like we're embarrassed. We don't want to admit that we got these problems. Well, at the end of my drinking, what happened was after 2 years of this, I don't know how much time I have. I can get into tangents. I got a little bit. But it was a big old football game in Atlanta. And when I would drink, I would play the big shot. I was the loud, funny guy. I was the one that the life of the party. And I thought I was the hilarious guy. And the truth was I was a blubbering, falling down drunk, I think. I think a lot of the time I was. People perpetuated that. But there was this big football championship in Atlanta. The SEC was up there. My team was playing. I won't say who they are because that's an outside issue, but I'll tell you that after the meeting if you want to know. But they're really good too. But they were playing, and I had all my buddies from Florida come up to this thing, and I had all these Marriott reward points, and I got booked this like a penthouse in the downtown Marriott of Atlanta. And it was like, I'm going to be, look at me, I'm so cool, I'm so whatever. And I knew that this was going on for a month leading up to it. And something in the back of my mind said, you know what, Joe, you're going to get there and you're going to start drinking it at 11 in the morning and you're going to be so drunk, you're going to get out of control. And I was afraid of that. But I was like, it was almost like watching a slow motion picture. I couldn't stop it. And that's what happened. And I remember going to the game, you know, at 6 o'clock that night and being so drunk, you know, trying to be this big shot, being so drunk that my buddy and his kids and we're all standing there at the Georgia Dome watching this football game. And I was so obnoxious and falling down and loud. They were basically looking at me like, what's wrong with you, man? Dude, you got a problem. And I knew if I stayed there longer, I was going to be put in jail for drunken disorderly conduct. I knew I would because I was that obnoxious. So I went back to, like any good alcoholic, I got up, went back to the hotel and kept drinking there. Because they can't arrest me here. Well, the next morning, it was a gray out, and I'm so grateful for this moment of clarity. And I know we get sober for ourselves, but in my case, I have a son who's, he was 14 at the time. And I had a party of like 30, 40 people in his hotel room. And I was the loud mouth, obnoxious, you know, just blowhard. I don't remember. But the next morning, I remember waking up in the bed because everybody left. And, you know, you look at a hotel room in a movie, it's like all the, you know, empty beer bottles everywhere and stuff thrown. And there was a bed. My 14-year-old had to stay with me and everybody else had gone to their, you know, their own ways. And I remember rolling over with that same hellacious hangover like I had when I was 15. You know, 10 gongs and just, oh, I can't believe I did it again. Oh, my God, Joseph. And I remember rolling over and looking at my son, and he had this look in his face, like he was so ashamed of me, and he can't believe his old man is this. He got so drunk, he embarrassed him. I embarrassed, and he had the same look on his face that I had with my dad. And I mean, it was like at that moment, it's like, holy crap, I'm passing this on to my kid. I can't do that. I can't do this, God. So for 2 years, it was at that moment that I got willing to go to any length. That's that moment of clarity you hear about. And that I did not feel good about it. I wasn't like bright lights. It was like, I can't do this. I don't want to perpetuate this disease. I am an alcoholic. I didn't give God permission. I didn't sign up for this. But it's not my wife. It's not God. It's just here. It's just the it's like something in my DNA. So it was at that moment that I decided I was willing to go to any length. And after 2 years of trying, you know, I went to treatment and other things like that. But what happened at that point was I started actually doing the deal. You know, I got a sponsor. I went to treatment, missed Christmas with my family, you know, nice little, it was just pretty miserable. But for the first 2 years, I didn't tell anybody I was in the program. And then I finally told, my wife and my buddy who's in the program I talked to. When this happened, I told everybody, like, I'm an alcoholic. I got to get sober. Please, please. And it was like that moment of clarity. I'll do anything. God, please don't let me do this again. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy. And little by little, you know, I was willing to go to any length. I was willing to do what I was instructed to do, all the things you hear about in meetings. And it started getting better. And I got a sponsor. My home group is a 6:15 a.m. meeting 6 days a week. And I hated the mornings. But you know what? In early, you know, that pink cloud thing that you're talking about, I hear that a lot. My experience was not pink cloud. Early sobriety sucks. I mean, it's like your insides are on your outsides. It's like you're trying to learn how to write with your other hand. You know, I honestly didn't know how to talk to people. I mean, I could never have done this. And I remember people would laugh at meetings, and I would say, how can you laugh at this vile, vicious disease? And, you know, this is terrible. So, oh, my God, you people are terrible. You must not have what I have, because it's terrible. I mean, and I remember days, you know, I had a buddy, but I also, that was the other thing I started doing, is I called people. Like, and that was, I have to admit this, too. With asking my sponsor, that was really hard to pick a sponsor, because it felt like I was asking them out on a date. Like, will you be my sponsor? But I was willing to go to any length, so I did. And then I didn't want to call people, but I started calling. I got a network. And by the way, here's a tip on my cell phone to do a short thing. I put a little QQ next to the name. So that's the A. I just typed QQ, and I have all my AA contacts. And I intentionally didn't put AA, because then everybody was like, whoa, why do you have all these AA contacts on your phone? No, it's their QQ, whatever the hell that means. But that's what I would hit a QQ and bam, you know, I'd called my buddies. And I remember one day calling Joe, and it was I work out of my house, and I remember telling him, I can't get out of bed. I didn't know how to explain it, but it was like, I just was so wrapped up in stuff in my head and, you know, anxious and this knot in the pit of my stomach and, I just, like, what, I don't, and he goes, Joe, this is funny, he's Irish and I'm Irish. He said, Joe, you're an Irishman and you're not drinking. It's normal. You don't know how to deal without the liquor. That's funny. But those kind of conversations, I thought it was funny. Okay, thank you. But the truth is, I had to learn how to live a new life. And you know, you've heard it. We kind of stop maturing when we start drinking, and then when we stop drinking, we start growing again. So I was about 15 years old. I was about 15 years old when I got sober 9 years ago, and I had to learn how to grow up. You know, I had to do the deal. I couldn't cut corners. In fact, I'll tell you this: my sobriety date isn't the last time I had a drink. It's the last time I stole a pain pill from my wife when I got back from treatment. And that was because when I was in treatment, that's funny too. It's like, you know, you learn all these things. Like, it was really funny because there's like 25 guys, and there was the old guys, there were the alkies, and then the young guys, they're on the drugs. And I learned about benzodiazepines and all these different, whoa, that's cool. I was like, you know, Joe, here's that peculiar mental twist in my mind. I thought, you know, Joe, your drug of choice is alcohol. So if you take some of those things, it doesn't count. Right? So when I came home, it was like I had a God shot. It was weird because my wife had surgery. She had pain pills, and I stole a couple of them. I stole my wife's pain pills. And after 3 days of taking that stuff, it's not funny. It was bad. I was filled with guilt and shame and remorse and all that stuff. And after 2 days of this, it was like God saying, Joe, are you in or are you out? Are you in? Are you going to do the deal and go to any length to stay sober? Or are you going to try to job the system? Like, technically, you know, and technically, there's nowhere in the 12 steps it never says stop drinking. So I think there should be a step zero, stop drinking. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. I mean, I used to say that to myself. Well, I could drink. I tried to do a fourth step when I was still drinking with my buddy. He goes, you got to stop drinking to do a fourth step. I really did that. And so I told my sponsor, I called my sponsor and said, John, I stole these drugs from my wife, and I took them. He goes, you need to go get a white chip right now. That's what we do in Atlanta. You know, I don't know, but you get a white chip to demonstrate sign, you know, universal sign of surrender. This is my first day of sobriety, and I had to do it on that day, and I don't think twice about it now. I'm so grateful that that happened, because, you know, if I hadn't done that, I don't know how I would have behaved, but I do know this. All of those, well, the other thing I would say about early sobriety is you just do the deal. Just don't think about it. If anybody's new in sobriety or struggling with it, trying to, you know, I'm blessed with, I don't overthink things too much. It's like, when I'm going to do it, just do what you said. Just go to a meeting. You know, get on your knees in the morning. Get on your knees at night. Say that short prayer. Thank you for keeping me sober. Please keep me sober. Morning, noon, and night. That was the first prayer. That's all it took to get the ball rolling. And, you know, throughout the day, my friends would say, you know, if you're anxious, you know, after we did my third step with my sponsor, when I would be really anxious, you know, say a third step prayer in your mind over. And I would say over and over and over third step prayers. And I have a bunch of other meditations that I say, because I had to block out the crap, you know, alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. Well, for me, the help was saying, God, help me, please. I love you, God. I praise you, God. I glorify your name. I love you, God. I praise you, God. I glorify your name. And I say other prayers like that just over and over and over to block out the other stuff. You know, and I've seen people that are really smart that they don't get that in the program. They think, well, you know, that's, you're believing in this little, you know, old-fashioned God. I don't care what other people think about that, quite frankly, because that's what keeps me sober. My little prayers. And I love what you said too, Jesse, about finding a church and that you like. Because even in the big book, it says, hey, you know, we don't have a corner on this. You know, go to your people, your faith. You know, find somebody that can help you expand your spiritual life. Because it also says, you know, pure sobriety isn't enough for us. We believe that if you don't expand your spiritual life, there's going to be some tough times ahead that you just might drink again. So we got to expand our spiritual life. And, you know, a little bit embarrassed. I remember the first time I said my prayers on my knees. You know, my sponsor, he said, he's from Pittsburgh. He goes, Pittsburgh, you throw your keys under the bed. So then you get up in the morning, and you get down on your knees to get your keys, and you say your prayers on your knees. So I never threw my keys under the bed. But I remember the first time I actually said my prayers on my knees, and I was embarrassed. I felt like a little boy with my wife. I don't care, you know. And I got over that. Now she actually kind of looks forward to it, or I don't mind. And so that's what happened. Do the deal. 12 steps, you guys. It's not rocket science. You guys said it today. I mean, there's 12 steps. There's 12 traditions. There's a big book. We just have to be willing to do the deal. That's what I had. That was the trick. There's a million people that have gotten sober, and I had to be willing to go to any length. Any length, by the way, is scary to think about. Like the fourth step, doing a fifth step, it's scary to think about it. But, you know, anybody who's done it comes out and say, whew, that wasn't so bad, you know. Any length is pray. I mean, any length is be of maximum service to another human being. You know, that kind of stuff. That's what keeps us sober. So, what happened, what things are like now. Okay, today, I don't think about drinking as an option. In the big book, the 10th step promises, you guys familiar with those, it says, you know, the problem has been removed when we're tempted by alcoholism, maybe we recoil from it like a flame. We recoil from it like a flame, you know, the problem's been removed. It's not work on our part. It's just not there. You know, think about if you always had to Jones. I remember when I was newly sober, I'd see billboards. I was at a supermarket one time, and Kroger's up in Atlanta. You know, we have Publix and Kroger, but Kroger, and I was going down one aisle. This is when I was newly sober. And, you know, I look up, and there's like a wine kiosk. I look, can't go there. I go over here, like, oh, and there's the beer aisle. I can't go over there. And I go over here, and there's another wine kiosk. I'm like, holy crap, they're trying to get me drunk. And I ran out of there. I'm like, oh, my God. That's a true story. I was like, I mean, but I still had an alcoholic mind, you know? I was still tempted. I thought that I believed the lie that it's going to be different, or I can go back to being 15 years old. And by the way, I passed out and I puked and all those kinds of things. But the truth is, I'm an alcoholic and I can't do those things. So I had to get over, I had to retrain my mind to be a non-alcoholic mind. So today, I can go to places like this conference I'm at, you guys. There's booze everywhere. Man, my first year of sobriety, I took myself off that circuit. I do this for a job, and I hated those things. I hated being around people drinking. I mean, I've heard of other people. Oh, yo, I have a guy in Atlanta. He's like, I was a bartender when I got sober. I don't recommend that. I'm like, I don't either, dude. I could never have done that. But I mean, just going to a place where people are drinking, I couldn't feel comfortable. So I took myself off that. Today, I'm okay with that. I'm just okay with it. And I still have isms. You know, I have still other things that I put my sobriety first today. Coming here to see you guys is part of me putting my sobriety first. In my job, I travel. I have to go to business meetings, and there's booze everywhere. And it was hard. For the first few years, I changed jobs. By the grace of God, I was able to change to a job that I didn't have to do that. But, you know, today, I can come and do it. And I find a meeting like this. I just look it up online. And because I know I'd rather be with you guys, be one of the young alcoholics. I'd rather be that than, you know, hanging out with, you know, around people. And it's also cool when you go to a conference. I don't know if you guys have ever done this yet, but you go to a conference in the morning after, like this morning, half the people show up. I'm there at 7:30. Okay, let's have a meeting. Let's do this. Like,
okay.
I swear to God, I got two emails, 3:15.
Joe, I'm not going to be at that 7:30 meeting.
Oh, shit. Excuse me. Anyway, I don't do that anymore. I don't have any desire to do that. Let's see. Yeah. I will tell you this too, and I never had a white light experience. Somebody told me, you've been to a meeting where they talk about the spiritual part of the program, but the truth is, to say the spiritual part of the program is like saying the wet side of water. It's all spiritual, you guys. It just is. Because We've got to, in our whatever capacity, whatever you believe, you got to figure out something bigger than you that's going to protect you from that evil demon alcohol or drugs or both, whatever it is. We got to have something that's going to protect us. And I am very spiritual today. I told you, like my, I used to say morning prayers. I was in a men's move, a men's small group, not a small men's group, but a men's small group, at a Methodist church. And that's where I got sober. I mean, that's where I finally broke down and I said, I can't live this lie anymore. But I did a lot of praying. My prayers are different now. My first prayers in sobriety were just don't drink. Please keep me sober. Thank you for keeping me sober. Today, I have expanded my spiritual life. And I remember, you know, that first moment of, well, a couple things. Today, I can sometimes pray for an hour or meditate for an hour and not even think twice about it. I did not plan that. I mean, it wasn't like I said, I want to become a spiritual giant. Today, let's see. Yeah. Oh, I remember one. I do want to share this because, you know, you talk about why we get sober, consequences, or like with my child, you know, my 14-year-old, by the way, he's 24 now, so older than some of you guys. But he, what was I going to say? Well, prayer is my go-to move. That's what I was going to say. When I need anything, when I still get myself filled with fear and remorse, at this conference, I had to come here because I'm anxious about my job. I'm anxious about, I have to speak tomorrow. And this is a practice role because I have to speak in front of like 500 people or something. And I needed to come to a place where I could just be myself and, you know, and acknowledge I'm an alcoholic and that's okay. And my sobriety is the most important thing in my life. I will not give that up for anything. I don't want to lose. I do the deal now because I love my life. I love waking up instead of with a hangover with a clean conscience. I love being able to wake up and remember what I did last night. I mean, that was like making you remember that was like, holy cow, I don't have to like tiptoe around people wondering who did I piss off or alienate or, you know, where did I don't have to wonder if my car is in the driveway or not. You know? Those are the little blessings, but just being able to wake up and say, okay, if I screwed up yesterday, I got the tools to fix it today. I can make living amends. I can go to my wife and apologize. I can, you know, if I blew something off at work, I can go try to straighten that out. And it's this program that has given me the tools to do that. This program has given me the tools to grow up, like I was saying, from 15, you know, so now what? I'm about 24. Giddy up. That's pretty cool, right? But, you know, it's given me the tools to be a better man. You know, I want to be a better man today. I want to be a better man, a better dad, a better husband, a better worker, a son, a brother, an uncle, neighbor. I just want to do that now because it's the right thing. And by the way, I got to share this too. It was a couple years into sobriety that I forgave my dad. You know, I told you I wanted to live my whole life. And I see that so many people I've seen in the program that don't get it. And where... If you're getting it, you're the lucky. We're the lucky ones. Because for whatever reason, you're in this room, you're not out partying. You know? You're sober today. And my dad didn't get that. My dad was an alcoholic the day he died. He tried the program. It didn't work. I'm not angry. I have compassion for him. And I love this program because it teaches us, you know, it's the one place where we want everybody to win. I want everybody here to be sober. You know, whatever your situation is, you know, it's a great life. Sober is good. Thanks for letting me share.